It was such a flood of emotions for him. For at least this moment, all that was outside the room could be forgotten. The cold, the death, the defeats and misery. She was here by his side, her lavender scent filling the room. They sat alone for almost a half hour, just gazing at the fire as Martha told him all about Mount Vernon, how good the crops had been, the births, marriages, and deaths of the slaves at their plantation, and the wishes they had extended to him. He thought of Billy Lee helping in the next room to prepare their dinner, away now from his family since the start of the war. Of course, his wife could not come to join him for this winter. Again, the vexing questions of what they were fighting for, and yet again, the unintended duplicity of it, with those few simple words, "All men are created equal." His great fear when the British fleet had entered the Chesapeake was that they would at least send a few ships up the Potomac to raid, gather supplies, and of course burn out the plantation and home of the military leader of the Revolution. It was curious Admiral Richard Howe had not ordered that to be done. He could only consider it to be an act of civility on the Admiral's part, and he was thankful for it. So strange was this war. He was forced to fight it with every fiber of his being, to stand by, dispassionate, at least outwardly, as he watched his army disintegrating from starvation and disease, while his enemies feasted and enjoyed the winter warm and safe in Philadelphia, but 20 miles away. Wayne still seethed, and would forever seethe, about what he and the survivors called the massacre at Paoli, though even General William Howe, Richard's brother, had agreed to an investigation, pointing out through an envoy that the attack had gone on at night with unloaded muskets at bayonet point only, which rarely left room for surrender in the mad panic of such a fight. He added that very many men had indeed been taken prisoner and shown mercy. And yet those same men, shown compassion on the battlefield, were reportedly dying at the rate of upwards of a dozen a day for lack of food, heat, and medicine, locked up just a few short blocks away from where General Howe and Admiral Howe made their headquarters. Strange and cruel this war is. My farm is spared, and yet men starve. Officers exchange pleasantries and salutes under flags of truce, but in a vicious fight at night, the wounded, begging for mercy, are bayoneted to death. On one day, civilians, showing proper passes, are allowed to pass back and forth freely through the lines, and yet a day later their farms might be ravaged and destroyed, and in more than a few cases the owner whipped, tarred and feathered, then driven off his land if believed to be on the other side. He sighed, and Martha, knowing his ways, saw that he was lost in thought while staring at the fire. She fell silent, just reaching out to take his hand and hold it tight. He looked at her, smiled, and stood up.
"God, how I have missed you,"
he sighed. And this time she did melt into his embrace, the two sharing a passionate kiss, Martha then sighing and leaning against his chest.
"We heard so many terrible things. Battles lost. Rumors you were dead or captured. Then this ugly gossip about Gates, Mifflin, and Conway trying to have you removed."
"You heard of that?" he asked, a bit incredulous, stepping back slightly to hold her at arm's length.
"George, the countryside is alive with rumors."
"Those..."
His voice trailed off. Martha could not even tolerate a damn coming from him, let alone what he was about to explode with.
"I would have thought they were gentlemen enough to keep it private between us. If the countryside knows, then most assuredly the British know. If they know, it is only encouragement for them to wait us out rather than seek an engagement, as I hoped."
"Then it's true?"
"Yes," he sighed. "It's true."
"How dare they?"
she announced indignantly.
"Of course they dare. The facts are plain enough, my dear. Gates allegedly wins at Saratoga. He showed himself to be a poltroon last year when he refused to cross the Delaware in support of my attack, and instead fled with Congress to Baltimore, there to lobby for position.
He finally wrangled a command in the Northern Theater and laid claim to the victory that came but weeks after his arrival. Colonel Morgan and others tell me that if the victory belongs to anyone, it is to our loyal friend Benedict Arnold, who saved the battle at a crucial moment, and, in so doing, was wounded in the leg so severely it was thought at first he would lose the limb. He is now recovering back at his home. Gates actually had him arrested for insubordination before that fight, but Arnold broke arrest and galloped to the front just at the moment Gates was ready to retreat. He rallied the men and led them to victory. But it was Gates who wrote the reports and all but galloped back to Lancaster and then York, claiming the victory, glory, and praise. He shook his head. He is now head of this contemptible board of war, and had the audacity to send his lackey Conway to, as he said, evaluate this army, which had all but been abandoned by Congress to fend for itself. Of course, all fault was laid here.
Will they remove you, George?
He smiled. We do have allies, my dear. God bless the Marquis de Lafayette. You will like him. He is like a son to me. Feeling awkward, he fell silent after saying that. Martha had given birth to 2 children from her first marriage, but there had been no children for the 2 of them, and the reason for it was therefore obvious. It was a burden and disappointment that haunted him, and thus, some rumored, why he formed such close bonds with young men of promise, who in turn looked to him as if he was their father. Lafayette, it was clear to her, was obviously one of them.
Why do you bless this young Frenchman? I heard the armies are all but overrun with adventure seekers claiming high rank, and Congress is all too ready to hand out those ranks.
This lad is different. He offered himself to me directly as a gentleman volunteer for my staff. He was everywhere and anywhere, almost a nuisance at times with his eager rushing about, but in time he proved himself. At Brandywine, I gave him temporary command of a brigade, and he led it with such elan and valor that the men, and mind you, those men were tough veterans, some in the ranks since Boston, cheered him. Now he is fighting a different battle, perhaps one just as crucial or even more so. He and others, of course, supposedly without my knowledge, he paused and looked at her coolly as if to emphasize his point, or yours, have embarked on a letter-writing campaign. He went so far as to write President Lawrence directly that if there was a change in command, he feared that friends of his in France might construe such a move the wrong way and urge the king to withdraw all support. I am told that, reading between the lines of that letter, it was clear he would be the one to write to the King of France and then personally deliver what he'd written. Generals Greene and Sterling are doing the same. There has even been a petition from several Virginia companies.
You seem to be getting told a lot about the activities of others, George.
She looked up at him with that understanding gaze of a wife who knew her husband far too well.
And your hand in this?
It would not be proper, of course, for me to engage in such activities or urge others to do so.
Wars are not just won on the battlefield, George. I recall reading one of your books by that Italian, involving princes and such.
Of course, I have no idea what you are referencing, Martha.
Oh, of course not, George.
He smiled.
Is it true about Dr. Rush, joining your critics?
He nodded his head sadly.
Yes, I trusted him, a good man. His encouragement was crucial before Trenton. That he would go over to their side is saddening. I've heard the same for both of the Adamses. Of John, I would have thought better.
Is there anyone on your side?
Some of the Virginia and Carolina delegates, but last report I had, there is barely a quorum left in York. The rest have fled or gone home for the winter, so there is little Congress can do. As for the Board of War led by Gates, they can file their reports. But with whom? As to their mad idea to rely solely on an army of militia and disband any troops of longer service, I dare them to come to this place, line up these men, and tell them so. I dare say half the men will grab their blanket roll and go home, most likely never to return. But as for the rest, his voice was cold as he spoke, and she could feel the tension in him. Not likely. I dare say that perhaps that was a hidden intent all along when we arrived at this place. Found not one day's food, not even a single ration waiting for 12,000 hungry, exhausted men. Not one tool, not one shelter prepared. His anger became clearly evident. Perhaps that was the intent all along. To let this army disintegrate, melt away, and go home. I would then be dismissed, and Gates would take command in the spring. That is, if he could rally any army at all to stand beneath the flag once more. He broke away from her side and went back to the window to look out at the rising storm.